You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Thursday, July 22nd, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we recap what was one of the more disappointing losses of the season for the Orioles, as they fall 5-4 in Game 3 of the series against the Rays on Wednesday afternoon, as Tampa takes the series 2-1. And for the Orioles, they had it. They were right there. They were one strike away, and Austin Meadows gets a walk-off hit to beat the O's in the bottom of the ninth. So we'll give you the five things you need to know from that game. Then we will continue our Orioles 2021 MLB draft breakdowns. We're just chugging along in order here. We're going to get to the Orioles' fourth round pick, the center fielder out of Arizona, Dante Williams, who has always been an absolutely elite defender. But his last 2 years of college, he became an elite hitter as well. So to talk about Dante and his Arizona career, we will have Michael Lev on the podcast. He covers Arizona baseball for the Arizona Daily Star. He's also going to talk to us about an Orioles undrafted free agent signing. That is Preston Price, the right-handed reliever that the Orioles signed out of Arizona as well. We'll talk about his career, how dominant he has been, and what his arm injury did to him here in 2021. So that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by another pod here on the network that is Locked On MLB Prospects. It's MLB draft season, and the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast is covering every future star of Major League Baseball. Host Aram Layton brings you player interviews and farm system breakdowns every single day. Subscribe to Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods. So we start today with a pretty crushing Orioles loss, and I try not to let the losses get to me at this point. I mean, the Orioles are not a great team. The loss brings them to 31-64 on the season. We're not expecting a lot of wins, but when you lose like this, it hurts, as the Orioles fall 5-4 to the Tampa Bay Rays. Austin Meadows with a 2-out, 0-2, 2-run walk-off single at the bottom of the ninth to make a 4-3 Orioles lead into a 5-4 Tampa Bay win. We're going to get you the five things you need to know from the game. And the first thing you need to know has to do with that bullpen. Because I know Tanner Scott didn't pitch great, and I know that he gave up the two runs and the walk-off, but it was still a good day for the bullpen. You got two-thirds scoreless from Cole Sulcer. You had an incredible job by Dylan Tate, who enters the game with a runner on third and one out in the bottom of the seventh. Orioles leading 4-3. Top of the lineup up, he strikes out Randy Arozarena, making him look silly, and then gets a ground out to end the inning. Yet Paul Fry pitching a scoreless eighth with a couple of strikeouts to keep it at a 4-3 game. And listen, Tanner Scott came in, but he got a little unlucky on the bad play on the little blooper into right field. And then, you know, he got ahead 0-2 on Meadows. You know, there were bases loaded, one out. He strikes out Brujan, and he got 0-2 on Austin Meadows. Couple of foul balls, just couldn't put him away. Left a fastball too much in the middle of the plate on 0-2, and he knocked it into center for the game-winning hit. But Scott still did look okay, and there weren't any hard hit balls against him. Nothing of the three hits he allowed were over 95 miles an hour. He struck out two batters. He, you know, did walk one, but honestly, he got a little unlucky in taking it there. And for the Orioles fans, you know, saying, oh, why didn't he go to Tyler Wells? Well, you know, Tyler Wells is still a Rule 5 draft pick, who isn't exactly the Orioles' set closer. Brandon Hyde also did say after the game, Wells, who did pitch on Tuesday's game, he was not available. Tanner Scott was the closer for the day, and it just didn't work out for Tanner Scott. But still, it was a good bullpen day for the Orioles. Second thing you need to know from the game is, listen, if Pat Valeika can be out there at second, then Jamai Jones can be too, because, you know, the play between Valeika and Mountcastle really kind of cost the Orioles the game. It felt like there were runners on first and second with one away in the bottom of the ninth inning. And just a little blooper off the bat of Randy Arozarena into shallow right center. Ryan Mountcastle, who was kind of swung over in the shift, looked like he was going to get there. Then Pat Valeika, who was playing second, just comes out of nowhere, kind of dives, takes out Mountcastle's legs, and it all of a sudden falls in for a base hit, ended up loading up the bases, and obviously really helped the Rays to win that game. And Pat Valeika, you know, he did hit a home run in this game. I mean, he had a leadoff homer in the third inning off of Michael Wacha that tied the game at two, just his second home run of the year, but he's still only hitting 188. 504 OPS. He's making bad defensive plays like that. Just give me Jamai Jones over Pat Valeika. Please, please, please. Just give me Jamai Jones. Third thing you need to know from the game is that the Orioles' top four in the lineup, the guys who should be hitting, well, they were hitting in this game. Cedric Mullins, 2-for-4 with a double and a run scored. Austin Hayes, 1-for-4 with a double and an RBI. Trey Mancini, 2-for-4 with a double, a single, and a run scored. And Ryan Mountcastle finally hit his first home run of July after that crazy red-hot June, his 16th home run of the season. It was a solo shot to the opposite field in the fourth inning that gave the Orioles a 3-2 lead. He was also 2-for-3 with that home run. He had two RBIs. He scored a one run. He drew a walk as well and did not strike out. Great day for the top four in the lineup to get the Orioles four runs on nine hits. Not much from the bottom five in the lineup, but you will take that from your top four guys that you are expecting to compete and produce at the top of your lineup. Fourth thing you need to know is that Alexander Wells was really, really good in his first major league start. Of course, Wells gets called up before the game and, kind of on short notice. Apparently he found out, right around 11:30 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday night that he was starting a 12:10 p.m. Eastern time game on Wednesday. But he was ready to go, and he looked great. Again, it was his third appearance in the big leagues, but his last two had kind of been at mop-up duty in relief. I was very impressed. 5 2/3, 3 runs on 5 hits, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks. He allowed 2 solo home runs on the day. Both of them were hit by Randy Arozarena. There were a good amount of hard-hit balls, but Wells was really, really good in this one. The 7 strikeouts in his first major league start over 5 2/3. Very, very impressed by that number for Alex Wells. He ended up getting 11 whiffs in 93 pitches. 6 of them came on the 4-seam fastball, which again, sat at 88. He topped out at 90 once, but basically he's sitting, 86 to 88 with that fastball. But he got 6 whiffs. He got 11 called strikes, 17 called strikes and whiffs on that pitch. Pretty good. And then he got 5 whiffs on that slider. He threw the fastball 51% of the time. Then he threw the slider 29% of the time. Then he basically just kind of tossed in a couple of curveballs and a couple of changeups to mix it up. But, I mean, the slider was good. And, I got to say, even though he only threw the curveball 11 times out of 93 pitches, he got 3 called strikes on that pitch. I was pretty impressed by how he's able to drop that curveball into the zone and throw it for a strike. This was probably the most I've been impressed by Alex Wells, whether it's watching some of his AAA starts or the two previous relief appearances in the bigs this year. He looked really, really good. And again, he maxes out at 90. He's throwing on average about 88 miles an hour with the fastball. But when his slider is at about 80, 81, and his curveball is like 71, 72, he can throw that high fastball and still get strikes. He was getting strikeouts with the high fastball in this one. And, that's how velocity doesn't matter. And again, he looked a little jittery early. His command was not very good in the first couple of innings, but he settled down and he only ended up walking 2. And he was really, really good in this game. He has earned himself a spot to continue in the starting rotation. And he may have to, because that brings us to our fifth and final thing you need to know from the game. The reason why Alexander Wells got this start for his first major league start is that Keegan Aiken and Anthony Santander were placed on the COVID IL before the game. Wells and Ryan McKenna took their places on the active roster. And, we really don't have any other information besides that. Brandon Hyde declined to, talk about what really happened. It could be any number of things to get you on the COVID IL. Obviously, positive tests can get you there. Close contacts with anyone who has tested positive can get you there. Even symptoms of COVID can get you on the COVID IL for maybe a day until they clear you with negative tests. So it's basically just going to be a waiting game for Aiken and Santander, and hopefully it's not more on the team. Hopefully it's just maybe they had some symptoms, they tested them, they put them on the IL for a day or two, and they come off after the off day today and are back for the Orioles. But it's something to monitor. The Orioles have made it to this point really without any issues. They never really had to place anyone on the COVID IL during the 2020 season. It hasn't really affected them so far in 2021, at least during the year, but we know this virus is still here. It is not gone yet. As much as it may feel like it's gone, it is not gone, and it is affecting the Orioles here for the first time, so we will keep our eyes on that. But now we do want to flip it to the minor league level and back to the draft, as the Orioles had a great draft, I feel like, and they brought in some really good players, and we are going to continue to look at those players. Today we get to the Orioles' fourth round pick, the center fielder out of Arizona, Dante Williams, an incredible defender whose bat really woke up in his junior and senior college seasons and could be kind of a late bloomer who looks really, really good. We're going to talk about him with Michael Lev. He covers Arizona baseball for the Arizona Daily Star. We'll talk about Dante Williams mostly, but we'll also talk about an Orioles undrafted free agent signing this year in the right-hand left-handed reliever Preston Price, who also played his college baseball at Arizona, and who Michael Lev knows a lot about as well. So we're talking Dante Williams, we're talking Preston Price with Michael Lev of the Arizona Daily Star. That's coming up after this break. So we'll get to our chat about two of the newest Orioles in just a second, but first, today's episode is brought to you in part by Fully Loaded Chew. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long-cut in pouches that give you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz you're used to without tobacco. Available in 9 flavors, Fully Loaded Chew is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine available. It's the only moist nicotine pouch on the market. All other nicotine pouches are dry white pouches. Nothing dips, spits, and packs like Fully Loaded. And Fully Loaded Chew is offering Locked On Orioles listeners a special offer. Right now, you can try a can for just $1. That's right, just $1. So go to www.fullyloadedchew.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON, it'll be just $1 for a can, and it'll be free shipping, too, if you use that code LOCKEDON at checkout. So the next time you go for a dip, make it Fully Loaded Chew and get it at fullyloadedchew.com. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to RockAuto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And the best part about it, the prices at RockAuto.com are reliably low for every single customer. So whether you need some brake parts, tail lamps, maybe motor oil, even new carpet, RockAuto.com has it all. They have everything you could ever need. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, so we welcome Michael Lev into the podcast. He covers Arizona football and baseball for the Arizona Daily Star, and he is here to talk about two of the newest Orioles. But first of all, Michael, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing great. And, you know, the Orioles, obviously, not a lot of winning at the major league level, but that means it's even more exciting when things like the draft come along. And that's what we're here to talk about, because the Orioles have brought in two Arizona Wildcats into the system last week. The first one being Dante Williams, the outfielder, who they selected in the fourth round. And then the right-handed pitcher, Preston Price, who the Orioles signed to an undrafted free agent contract after the draft. Now, we're going to focus a little more on Dante Williams today. And I did want to start with him because, you know, he has made some just unbelievable plays in center field in his time with Arizona. And we'll get to the bat, but I just have to ask, like, you know, you see other Arizona outfielders, you see guys in the Pac-12, like where does he rank up there, and how ridiculous are some of the plays he's made? Because I've seen video of some of them and he just looks like he covers so much ground out there.
Yeah, I would rank him near the top of defensive outfielders that I've seen in person in the Pac-12 for sure. He has good speed. I wouldn't say he has great speed, but he gets very good jumps. He really is a leader out there in center field. The other thing you have to keep in mind too about him and about anyone who comes from Arizona, huge outfield at High Corbett Field. It's 4'10" to left center and 4'05" to right center. So you can imagine how much territory you have to cover as a center fielder. He actually began his career here as a left fielder, and it's, I think, 366 down the left field line with a significant amount of foul territory. So you almost have to be a second center fielder if you're playing left. The other thing I would say about Dante as an outfielder is he will absolutely sacrifice his body to make a catch. He does not care. If he hurts himself along the way, if he can make a positive play for the team. And I've seen him do that time and again. We even interviewed him about it specifically one time. He will do whatever it takes to help the team win. And if that means, you know, laying out, you know, completely horizontal across the field, crashing into the wall, whatever the case might be, that's his approach as a defensive player.
And, you know, I do have to ask as well, because, you know, for a lot of guys who are known as these great center fielders who cover all this ground, you know, the Orioles actually have one of them in the major leagues in Cedric Mullins, who covers all this ground. But the one thing he does sacrifice is the arm. Mullins definitely has a below average arm. So I did want to ask about Williams, you know, where does the arm come into play? Because I know sometimes, you know, you may put your worst arm in center field, but kind of where do the, you know, you and the coaches as well kind of see his arm going forward?
Yeah, I think I've seen scouting reports that said he had an average arm. I would push back on that. I think it's at worst above average. I'd say above average to good. He's a left-handed thrower. I can recall several assists over the course of his career here. Very good accuracy. You know, not on the top level of maybe the best right fielders that you'll see in MLB, but not a liability. At all. Not someone that other teams were running on. So I think that it's more of an asset than a liability. And I think that the overall scouting report on Dante kind of underrated him heading into this thing. And where the Orioles picked him, I think was much more in line with the type of prospect and player that we all thought that he was.
So I want to go over to the offensive side. And first I got to ask, you know, freshman and sophomore year, Dante Williams was a good, definitely above average, you know, solid hitter who you wanted to have in the lineup every day. Junior and senior year, Dante Williams became one of the better hitters in the Pac-12. So was there, you know, one big indicator of something that really changed for him between that, you know, sophomore and junior season?
I remember him having some struggles in fall ball after his sophomore year. But he went back to work, went in the lab, made some adjustments, really turned things around. If you look at his career progression, he improved almost every year. His batting average went from 258 to 267, 348 in the shortened 2020 season, and then 342 this past year. He reversed his walk to strikeout ratio, right? In his first 2 years, he had more strikeouts than walks. In his last 2 years, he had more walks than strikeouts. He got on base just about 50% of the time over the 2020 and 2021 seasons, which is exactly what you would want from a leadoff hitter. To me, his success is just rooted in his work ethic and his effort. I would consider him something of an overachiever. Like, I didn't think he'd become as good a player as he became when I first saw him. And that's all because of him and the work that he put in. He is also a very high character guy, drew a lot of praise for that element, for bringing those elements to the team and the locker room. So I think when you put that whole package together, it's really appealing, and I can understand why the Orioles were interested in him.
Did you notice at all, you know, because obviously really the power part of the game and the home runs really became a part of his repertoire offensively his senior year. You know, he had, I believe, three homers in 3 years before that, and then he hit eight of them this year, and he hit some monster shots, even in the regional as well. He was hitting some long home runs. You know, for some guys, you know, they just kind of get a little bigger, you know, in the gym. Was it that for him? Was it a different approach? What did you kind of notice that allowed him to take the ball out of the yard, which obviously made him more valuable, you know, going into the draft this year?
Yeah, I think it was just getting bigger and stronger over the course of time. And one of the knocks on him, you know, coming into this draft process was his size, which I thought was kind of weird, because does it really matter how tall you are as a center fielder? I mean, you referenced Cedric Mullins earlier. What is he, 5'8"?
Exactly.
Dante is listed at 5'10". But just because you're short doesn't mean that you're small. And he's done a really good job of building up his body and improving his power. And I don't think he's ever going to be someone who hits 30 home runs in the big leagues, but maybe he'd give you 14 to 18 if everything works out, you know, ideally. And certainly someone who's going to get on base a lot. He's very patient as a hitter, which I think not only helps him to get on base, but puts him in advantageous counts where he can maybe sit on a fastball and take it out of the yard. I think that's part of it too, is improving his approach to get pitches that he could really put a hard swing on.
Yeah, and you mentioned the patient approach. I mean, you know, 50 walks to 40 strikeouts this year, including 17 hit by pitches. I'm sure he doesn't mind getting to first base that way as well. But I did have to ask, you know, you mentioned that he's fast, but maybe it's not, you know, the most elite speed. So he stole 9 bases this year. He stole 7 bases in fairly similar playing time in 2019. You know, does that have more to do with philosophy of the team? Because I know some teams just don't steal bases, or is Dante maybe, you know, not the maybe elite level of a base stealer?
A little bit of both. I think, like I said, good speed, not great speed, a good base runner. Again, very high effort guy. Like, you will see him like flying around the bases. His helmet always falls off. Like extremely aggressive. The stolen base totals are a reflection of the type of teams that Arizona had. One of the best offensive clubs in the nation starting in 2019, continuing through 2021. It just didn't make a lot of sense for them to play small ball. And they didn't, because they had so many guys who could hit, so many guys who could get on base, so much extra base power. They were very selective in terms of when they would run. And I think that's the biggest factor of all in why he didn't steal that many bases.
Yeah, an exciting player to have coming into the organization. As you said, you know, the Orioles seem to value him higher than other teams in taking him in the fourth round. And hopefully that works out for Baltimore. They were able to scoop him up. But, you know, my initial, you know, plan was to, you know, reach out to you, Michael, and have you talk about Dante Williams. And then all of a sudden, the Orioles brought in another Wildcat that I got to ask you about as well. And that is Preston Price, who had a really interesting final year at Arizona. Now, he's an older guy. You know, he has spent 5 years in the program. And, you know, he had some interesting numbers and an interesting season. And first, I got to ask, I know he went out with an injury kind of in the middle part of the season when working out of the Arizona bullpen. And he came back at the end, but he just didn't seem like he was the same. Kind of what went into that injury, and how did he look different when he did return right at the end of the year?
Yeah, you know, he was, I would say, Arizona's MVP before he got hurt. They brought him into several high leverage situations, including multiple times he came in with the bases loaded and didn't give up any runs, which is, you know, the hardest situation you can possibly face as a relief pitcher. He suffered some sort of arm injury in the middle of the year. I don't know exactly what it was. When he came back, it wasn't that his stuff was off or that his velocity was down. It was just his command wasn't the same. Like, he just looked rusty. He wasn't sharp. He just wasn't able to throw strikes at the same rate that he was previously. He just didn't look quite right. And I think that it was just, you know, the circumstances more than anything. Like, I don't think it's any sort of long-term concern. He probably just needs a little bit more time, a little bit more work in the bullpen, just more game. Like, he got thrust into games, you know, like right at the end of the season. And, you know, there's no going down to AAA to have rehab starts. You know what I mean? That option doesn't exist in college. So I think that was the biggest issue that he had and why he wasn't quite as sharp as the pitcher we saw earlier in the season.
And he still put up, I mean, ridiculous numbers, 35 strikeouts in just 21 innings. He allowed only 14 hits on the year. He was having a fantastic 2020 before the shutdown, and he had a pretty solid 2018. I know things were a little rough in 2019 and he had a little roller coaster there, but I do have to ask, you know, before the injury, when he's at his best, you know, what kind of pitches is he throwing out there, and, you know, like, how good can he be?
Preston Price is a slider specialist. That is his money pitch. That is his best pitch. It is a very hard slider that can, he throws it two different ways depending on the circumstances. Sometimes it's a little bit more of a horizontal break, and sometimes it's a little bit more of a vertical break. And if he makes it to the big leagues, it's going to be because of that pitch and his ability to get out right-handed hitters with that pitch. You know, the strikeout totals, as you mentioned, were just off the charts this year. 35 and 21 in the third innings. Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to throw harder than probably not mid 90s at the best if he maxes out. So he's not going to be one of those guys who comes in and just blows people away. It's going to be that slider that right-handed hitters just can't pick up or can't hit very well. That's going to be his moneymaker if he's able to advance through the system. And, you know, again, like Dante Williams, high character guy, really good work ethic, kind of a self-made player who improved a lot over the course of his career. So in terms of the makeup, I think he also has what it takes to get the most out of his ability.
And as a 23-year-old, you know, five-year college pitcher, as long as he can, you know, stay healthy, and if he is healthy, he's a guy who could rise pretty quickly through a minor league system with the innings and experience he has. Last thing quickly, I did just want to ask, I don't know if you'd thought about this or you know, heard other people talk, but do you feel that, you know, if there was no injury, Price may have, you know, been a draft pick, and you know, the Orioles may have been able to get a bit of a steal here, just having him as an undrafted free agent?
I think that would have helped for sure. I mean, like I said, he was profiling as Arizona's MVP of the first half of the season or so. He was that good. He was that dominant. It's always a little bit weird with the MLB draft because, you know, money is such a big factor, and, you know, can you guys sign guys below slot? I didn't feel like, at least for Arizona's like two senior guys, they didn't get those senior sign opportunities this year that you'd normally see like in rounds, what, 6 through 10 or so. Maybe that's because the draft is shorter now and teams are approaching it differently. I figured that both he and his teammate Vince Vannelli, another right-handed reliever, I thought both of them would get drafted, and they didn't. I'm glad to see that Preston is getting an opportunity to show what he can do. In terms of a steal or a bargain for the Orioles, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think you see that sometimes guys make it to college because they have some sort of arm injury and they would have gone pro otherwise. And this sort of feels like a similar situation to me, that he would have been drafted if he had been fully healthy. And the fact that he wasn't enabled the Orioles to scoop him up.
And the Orioles obviously heard something that you know, the injury isn't a huge issue. And it's good to hear that his stuff was the same after coming back. It was just the control kind of leads you to believe that the arm, not as much of an issue. But Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Talk about two former Arizona Wildcats who will be joining the Orioles system here shortly. I'm excited to see them both continue in the O system and hoping both of them get to the big leagues. But Michael, thanks again.
Good deal. Thank you.
So we're back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now, we've got baseball season in full swing, and you can track all the action over at betonline.ag. And hey, maybe you want to bet on, I don't know, who's going to win the major awards. Maybe for AL MVP, you want to go Shohei Ohtani. Maybe you want to go Vladdy Jr. Maybe for the AL Cy Young, if you think John Means has enough starts left in him and doesn't pitch like he did the other day to maybe win it. But you can get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs there as well, not just MLB, but, you know, how about the UFC and MMA action every single weekend as well. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. And while you're there, make sure you sign up, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. You can get all that done over at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So our thanks again to Michael Lev, who covers Arizona baseball and also football over at the Arizona Daily Star, for joining us to talk about two of the newest Orioles. And news on Dante Williams, the Orioles' fourth-round pick, the Arizona center fielder that they selected. The Orioles announced back on Tuesday that he had signed his contract, and we got the bonus number as we found that out late on Wednesday night. Dante Williams signs for $400,000. As expected, he goes a little under slot in that spot. That slot value was $549,000, so the Orioles save about $149,000 there. We actually got another reported slot value for Reed Trimble, who, of course, we talked about on the episode on Tuesday. Now, this was a little bit of a surprise. Reed Trimble, with all the helium he had, just being a draft-eligible sophomore, we assumed that, you know, he wouldn't go crazy crazy overslot, but maybe the Orioles would have to pay, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 overslot, and some of that money they would save, they would use on a guy like Reed Trimble. That was not the case. He went underslot as well. The Orioles signed Trimble for $800,000. The pick value, slot value there was $1,025,100. So they saved about $225,000 there. You combine that with the Dante Williams savings, and they've got, you know, close to $375,000 extra save, which is getting them right up around $1.7, $1.8 million so far that they have saved. So we will see where they have allocated that. Maybe a lot of that is going to Creed Willems, the one high schooler they drafted to keep him away from TCU. But again, today's episode was about Dante Williams and Preston Price. And for Dante Williams, you know, there's been some Jackie Bradley Jr. comparisons thrown out there. Many people think, you know, obviously he does not have the same ceiling as Jackie Bradley Jr., but if he could be maybe a JBJ light, the Orioles will take that. And I mean, the hitting statistics, I mean, he hit 342, 456 on base this year. He had 8 home runs. He had 17 doubles, 50 walks to 40 strikeouts in 313 plate appearances here in his senior year. This is a great player in Dante Williams. Very excited to see him get started. And he is older. You know, he is now 22 years old. He's one of those guys who could potentially just, you know, go right to Delmarva, or maybe, you know, might play a couple of games in Florida before going to Delmarva. And then I'm really interested in Preston Price. We talked about it at the end there with Michael. Could he be a steal as an undrafted free agent if he doesn't suffer that arm injury in April this year? I mean, he probably ends up being one of the best relievers in all of college baseball here in 2021. He's an older guy, you know, a 5-year college guy. You know, he's already, you know, at this point, 23 years old. And, you know, the Orioles could definitely use some arms out of the bullpen in the lower minor leagues, and, you know, especially up at the Bowie level where they have struggled in that position. So he's going to be probably a reliever all the way. He was a reliever all of college, you know, never was a starter. And so he can go right into the bullpen, you know, maybe at Delmarva to start as long as he's healthy. But we'll see what the deal is with that arm injury. Because again, as we talked about, the stuff was the same, but the command just wasn't there when he returned from the, you know, undisclosed arm injury. But for draft coverage here on the pod, it is going to continue next week. But the next couple of episodes, we're going to go away from the draft a little bit. We will be back with you here on the podcast tomorrow. Of course, the Orioles have the day off today, so no game to recap tomorrow. Now, on tomorrow's episode, we will quickly look ahead to the weekend series as the Orioles host the Nationals for 3 games in the Beltway Battle. But tomorrow's episode is going to be all about the Orioles minor leagues, and specifically the first half of the minor league season, because if you can believe it, we are now basically, for most teams, at right around the halfway point of the 2021, you know, somewhat shortened minor league baseball season. And so Zach Spedden is going to join us on tomorrow's episode. He is, of course, one of the co-hosts of the BSL On the Verge podcast, covering all things Orioles minor leagues. One of the best podcasts out there, the best podcast for Orioles minor league content. You need to be following them on Twitter. You need to be listening to that pod. They drop new episodes every Monday night. Zach is going to join us on tomorrow's episode. We're going to hand out Orioles minor league midseason awards here for this year. We'll give out the MVP, the Cy Young, the most surprising, most disappointing players of the first half. And we will talk about maybe some breakout candidates in the second half in this exciting Orioles farm system. So that is all coming up on tomorrow's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.